What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Martian MMA podcast. This week, I'm going to be breaking down the UFC Apex card going down this weekend from Las Vegas, headlined by a rematch between Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis in the Premier Division in the main event. And top to bottom, it's looking okay. You know, it's not looking good. It's not looking like the worst Apex card we've had in recent memory. There's a few good spots, a few good fights. Looking forward to Matsumoto versus Argueta. Looking forward to Trevor Peak versus Charlie Campbell. Of course, everyone's looking forward to that one. I think Morgan Charrier versus Mariscal is a really good fight as well. And the main event, it's short notice. It was supposed to be Allen versus Vettori. Instead, it's Chris Curtis filling in for his teammate who got injured. And that's an okay rematch as well. I think that, you know, enough time has passed since the first fight to make a rematch potentially interesting there. So, you know, decent card this weekend. Last weekend, I would say, was a good card, you know, for us. I think the predictions were majority good in that one. Missed it on the main event by picking Aaron. Missed the GTD in the Buckley fight. And let's see what else we had. Missed the over in the Arce and Herbert Burns fight. Missed Petrosky and a few props associated with him, but we had some good ones. Lagren decision plus 250 hit. Ibo Aslan moneyline and Bazookia moneyline both hit. I shouted out the late KO props in the Arce fight, the over in the Jane Rodoba fight. And the highlight of the card was the Reese McKee Chidi Njokwani decision, which cashed at plus 350, along with Chidi decision plus 750, two big winners there. So I would say it was a pretty good card for me. You know, definitely ended up in the profit. Didn't do well with live bets for a change, though. You know, I usually make a good amount back on the live bets, but last week was kind of a break-even week for me in the live bets, so looking to bounce back this week. And a lot of MMA going down this weekend. There's all types of regional cards. There's PFL starting off their first episode of the season tomorrow. One, LFA, KSW, Cage Warriors. A lot of MMA going down this weekend, so a lot of stuff to watch. And WrestleMania, of course, can't forget that, going down in the home city of Philadelphia. And that's enough about all other things. Let's get into these cards and these fights. I'm going to start at the bottom again. You know, I like building up to the main event. You know, you get to go through the tiers of fights. For instance, this first fight, I'm going to spend about 60 seconds on. Women's bantamweight division, Melissa Mullins, also known as Melissa Dixon, taking on Nora Cornell. Odds for this one have, I'm going to keep calling her Dixon. But it's Dixon to me. Minus 350 for her, Cornell plus 285. I mean, Cornell's grappling is terrible. Her takedown defense is terrible. Her bottom game is bad. And I really think that she easily could have lost that last fight against Jocelyn Edwards. She got on top at a few key times in the fight to hit some reversals, and that won her the decision. But I thought that was really bad from her there. And I think that Dixon has a good chance at just hitting takedowns and making this one look easy. And she's pretty aggressive once she gets on top as well. So I know that last week I was saying that the overs in women's fights should be just an automatic bet nowadays, but this one is one that I'm not interested in at all. I think if anything, playing the under or the inside the distance here could be a decent angle, because I think Dixon has good potential to either ground and pound her or maybe even pull off the first submission of her career. Sub is at 8-1 right now. If it opens up at 10-1 at some other books, that might be my only stab on the fight, just hoping that Dixon finds her first submission in this fight. Because if she gets on top, man, I think it's going to be really easy for her, and Cornell ain't getting up. So enough about that one. Next fight, Premier Division here, Dylan Budka taking on Cesar Almeida. Odds for this one have Budka minus 148, Almeida plus 128. A couple of guys making their debuts off the Contender Series here. And they're winning by decision as well. I mean, it's interesting. So, guys, I was watching this. There's a new fight announced. It was supposed to be Alatang Haley. Instead, it's Pedro Falcao. Falcao won his fight. He looked good grappling the guy. He finished him in the third round with a ground and pound, and he didn't get signed. Nowadays, anybody who fucking wins is getting a sign. I mean, Dylan Budka's fight in the Contender Series was dog shit. Even Almeida's was pretty bad. And they're both getting signed for winning, you know, underwhelming decisions. The standards for the Contender Series has absolutely plummeted. And the Contender Series is really responsible for a huge portion of the decline of the quality of UFC. But getting over to this matchup, got a little sidetracked there. I like Almeida here as the underdog. I already have a bet on him at plus 140 something. And I think, you know, any plus money on Almeida, I think is good because it's interesting. This guy's a kickboxing, comes from a kickboxing background, lifetime in kickboxing. And in his Contender Series fight, he showed actual proficiency in everything but the striking. You know, I think that in that fight, he didn't look like a great striker, but he showed some decent ability to stuff takedowns and to land on top of his own takedowns. And it just seemed like he was learning the clinching and the grappling of MMA. So that's actually a good thing. You know, if he knocks some guy out in 1 minute, we wouldn't learn anything about him. We would learn that he has good striking, but we already knew that from his kickboxing background. But I think that fight on the Contender Series was actually a good learning experience for Almeida, and I think he showed some promise, and I just don't think Budka is any good. I think Budka is going to be looking to clinch and to grapple here, but I'm not really impressed with his takedowns. You know, he has decent grit. It seems like he's going to keep shooting takedowns for as long as he can get them, but I just don't think he's going to do a whole lot with his grappling here, and I think that the striking upside is, you know, very, very majority on the side of Almeida here. So even if Budka is, let's say, landing a takedown, pushing him against the cage, he's doing that for 2 or 3 minutes. A few big strikes from Almeida on the break of the clinch or something could swing him back the round. So I think, you know, it's going to be a close fight. I think, you know, maybe pick a maybe slight Almeida favorite is accurate here. So I like a, you know, one unit bet for me, a little more than a unit actually on Almeida, but that is not financial advice, not telling you guys what to do with your money. I'm just telling you what I'm doing with mine. And we're moving on to the next fight, bantamweight division. Gene Matsumoto taking on Dan Argueta here in a really good fight in the bantamweight division. The odds for this one have Matsumoto minus 157, Argueta coming back plus 137. And in this fight, I believe that the wrestling of Argueta will likely win him the first round. It really could win him the entire fight, but I don't think Argueta has a whole lot of depth to his game. I mean, his striking is really bad. Matsumoto is the better striker by a significant margin in this fight. But Argueta, he knows what he likes to do, and that's grind guys out, get him in the clinch, push him to the cage, take him down over and over again, maybe even jump on a submission if it presents itself. But I don't think he has a whole lot of ideas outside of that. We saw that in the Miles Johns fight. He came out hot. He took him down a few times early on. And then when Miles Johns got back to his feet, Argueta didn't really know what to do. And he kept crashing inside with the same, you know, terrible strikes and wasn't really completing any takedowns. And he lost the second and third round of that fight super clearly. And I think that has potential to happen again here. And I do think Argueta starts well, so I wouldn't bet Matsumoto before the fight. Pre-fight, I would say Argueta is the side of plus money, but I would be looking to live bet on Matsumoto here because I think he's the better overall mixed martial artist. I've seen decent things in his defensive grappling. I haven't been impressed. I haven't, you know, seen great defensive grappling, but I think he's competent in stopping takedowns, getting back to his feet, and I think that he will initially get out grappled here, but he'll work his way into the fight, start, you know, getting some distance between the two of them and outstriking Argueta. But man, it's going to be close because even when Argueta is getting outstruck at distance, he's just going to continually crash inside trying to get those takedowns. So I think Matsumoto's the much cooler fighter of the two, but I'm not convinced that he actually wins this fight. So wait to see how the fight's going live. If Matsumoto is doing better at disengaging from the takedowns, look to live bet him. But, you know, Argueta could definitely grapple his way to a decision here. I think if you like Argueta, you should also have some of that Argueta decision prop as well, because that is, I believe, plus 235. And also come in with that angle that Matsumoto might take over late, maybe some stabs on his second and third round props at, I think it's 9-1 and round three is a bad price right now because it's on Bet Online. But just wait for the props to open up at better sportsbooks because Bet Online's prop market is pretty weak. pretty soft. Moving on to the women's strawweight division, Cynthia Calvillo taking on Piera Rodriguez. Piera trying to bounce back from her first loss as a pro, getting destroyed by Jillian Robertson. And this one, the odds are Piera as the favorite, minus 132, Calvillo plus 112. Popular underdog this week, Cynthia Calvillo. She's lost five fights in a row. But it seems like the market is still respecting her. You know, it's interesting. You know, you see somebody lose five fights in a row, you would think that the public perception on them would be in the toilet, but that's actually not the case. And it's probably helped by the fact that her past two fights were close. The Nunes, the Ansaroff, and the Loopy fight were both close. And I think her, you know, her jab looked good in the Loopy fight. Her striking looked solid. And she's fighting Piera Rodriguez, who is predominantly a grappler, who's looking to take opponents down. But miraculously, Cynthia Calvillo hasn't been taken down a single time in her past eight or nine fights. Yeah, not since the Carla Esparza fight. It's been nine fights spanning over 2 hours in the cage, and she hasn't been taken down a single time. Now, she's only faced, I think, five or six takedown attempts in that time frame, so it's not the most impressive feat. But guys, we know how women's MMA fights goes. They always end up on the ground. They always, in some sloppy fashion, end up on the floor. But that hasn't happened to Calvillo, which is, you know, fairly impressive. So you got to think that Calvillo's style is pretty good for beating Piera, because Piera needs those takedowns. Her striking is sloppy, and I don't think her gas tank is that great either. So I could see Cynthia, you know, putting on a vet lesson, you know, stuffing the takedowns, out striking her at distance, taking over with her experience and her cardio, because Calvillo is the much more experienced fighter by a wide margin. So I understand the people coming in on the underdog here for Calvillo. Personally, I'm not interested. I mean, five losses in a row is kind of hard to get over. A tough hurdle to climb, if you will. But I mean, I think I agree with people coming in on Calvillo. Like I just said, I think the matchup is pretty good for her, but I just can't get around to it, you know? And I don't really think there's any bets on that fight that look good to me. The GTD is minus 375%. Should probably be like 85%, honestly. But no bets, no interest in that one for me. This next fight doesn't have a line out. It just got announced today, but I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about the matchup, and I'll talk about what I anticipate the line to be. It's Pedro Falcao versus Victor Hugo. No odds for this one. I'm going to guess. Now, the line could open up anywhere. You know, it could open a huge range of prices. I'm going to guess this closes at Pedro Falcao minus 175, Victor Hugo plus 150. And you know, Hugo, I think, is a bum, honestly, a glorified bum. He's got 24 fucking wins in MMA, and barely a single one of those wins is worth a damn. I mean, he's fought really low-level competition, and I just think this guy is no fucking good. I mean, he's very reliant on leg locks and heel hooks, and that's just not a good style, especially at these lower weight classes where all the guys know jiu-jitsu. And I'm just not impressed with Victor Hugo in any stretch of the imagination, right? Even his striking, I think, is pretty bad. He missed weight for his last fight against Daniel Marcos. And Pedro Falcao is coming in on short notice, but the guy looks like a solid fighter. You know, Nova União, Extreme Couture trained fighter. So, you know, started in Brazil, in the best gym in Brazil, or, you know, one of the best. At one point, the best, but nowadays, I'm not sure. And then moved his way to America, training at Extreme Couture, getting more experience up in America. He fought just about a month ago, I believe, and won the fight really easily. Oh, no, that was way longer ago. It was 5 months ago, but won the fight really easily, took his opponent down, choked him out. And I think that the one thing about Pedro is I think that the guy's a good grappler. I think he's good defensive and offensive. And, I mean, he's a third-degree black belt. He's trained at Nova União. There's no way this fucking guy is getting caught with knee bars and heel hooks like some of the bums that Victor Hugo fought. So, right away, I like his chances. I'm not super impressed with his striking, but I think his striking should be serviceable enough to outpoint Hugo on the feet here, be a little bit better than Hugo on the feet. And I just trust his grappling, man. I think that he's going to shut down the offensive takedowns of Hugo, might even hit his own takedowns. And I just think Falcao is better than this guy, man. I value his experience more, fighting in a much more reputable promotion. And I got Falcao here. If he opens up, or if his price is anything under what I just mentioned, minus 175, it's going to be a bet for me on Falcao. Next fight, women's bantamweight division, Norma Dumont, Jermaine Durandamé, GDR, coming off of a long layoff here, 3.5 year layoff, and having a baby, you know? She shoved a baby out of her vagina, as women do. But Norma Dumont, minus 152, Jermaine Durandamé plus 132. And this is another fight where I kind of similar to the Calvillo fight, where I see, yeah, Jermaine could present some problems for Dumont. You know, at her best would be a good matchup for her. But there's just questions. I don't know, man. The long layoff, the baby. This kind of burnt me last week because I probably would have liked Verna Jandrodoba last week, but I heard that she had, you know, knee surgery, you know, 35-year-old woman, longtime combat sports athlete, getting knee surgery. It scared me away. She ended up being, you know, a great bet. And that could be the case with Calvi or Jermaine here, but I'm totally okay just sitting on the sidelines waiting, or, you know, passing, waiting for live. I'm not going to have any FOMO, I think, if Jermaine Durandamé or Cynthia Calvillo win these fights. So, you know, Norma, if she hits takedowns here, could make it easy, but she doesn't really go to those takedowns super consistently. So she definitely has potential to make this fight closer than it needs to be. But I don't know, man. Jermaine, how old is she? She's 38, right? 39. And she's turning 40 later this month. And she's, you know, a long kickboxing career, long MMA career. I mean, she's been pro in her first fight on Tapology is literally 20 years ago. So no interest in taking the 40-year-old off a 3.5 year layoff and a baby and 25 years in combat sports at this point. You know, I'm not talking shit on it if anybody has the balls to actually take Jermaine, because I do think if there's a bet to be made, it probably is better off being Jermaine than Norma. But man, I just can't get around to it. And the props, again, not seeing anything great. The price on Norma sub is not enticing enough for me to take it. It's probably going to be a Norma decision, which is minus 115. You would be a fool to take that line instead of her money line. If you like Norma in this fight, stick with the money line instead of the decision line. But that's enough about that one. We are moving on to the last fight on the prelims. A fun fight here between Court McGee and Alex Morono. And in the welterweight division, we have Alex Morono minus 290 and Court McGee coming back plus 245. Couple of veterans here. And I'm not interested in Court McGee. I think this line sticks out as a little wide to me, but I think inevitably Court will win the fight, and I just can't get around to the value bet on Court McGee here. I do think that Court has a potential wrestling advantage in this fight. The guy's strength has looked really good, even though he's very late into his career. 14 years in the UFC at this point, 17 years pro in MMA. But he's coming off of two nasty knockouts in a row. I mean, the Jeremiah Wells one was literally as vicious as it gets. The Matt Brown one wasn't as bad, but still, back-to-back knockouts at 39 years old, this late into his career, man, it's tough to get inspired about Court McGee. Now, he's plus 250. You don't have to be too inspired, but Morono low-key has some pop. Like, his strikes have some power behind them. However, he is horrible, absolutely horrible at following up those shots. I mean, he has hurt so many guys and then not capitalized on them. I mean, the Ponzinibbio fight most notably, I mean, he dropped him three times in that fight and still got knocked out himself. So, I mean, Morono is not the kind of guy you can lay this juice on, obviously not. But I do think that he will win the fight. You know, I think that at some point Court's going to do a chicken dance. But you know, I wouldn't knock anybody having the balls to take Court money line. I know if you like Court money line, I would also advise taking some of his decision line at plus 375. I'm sure it'll open at better prices on FanDuel, DraftKings, you know, later in the week, probably tomorrow at some point. But you know, I do think that Court winning is very decision correlated. I think that he will probably grapple his way to a decision if he's winning, because I think his last four or five wins in a row all by decision. It's 8 wins in a row. He hasn't finished a fight in 14 fucking years, and wow, that's incredible. Enough about that one. We are moving on to the first fight on the main card, which happens to be an absolute fucking banger between Trevor Peak and Charlie Campbell in the lightweight division. The odds for this one have Charlie Campbell minus 175, Trevor Peak plus 150. So I've been wrong about all Trevor Peak fights so far. You know, I bet on Gonzalez. I bet on him versus Chepe. I don't think I bet on Yaya. I hope I didn't. Maybe I did. I think I might have placed a last-minute wager on Muhammad Yaya moneyline. Dog shit bet. So I've been off the mark with Trevor Peak. I've had a tough time getting a read on the guy. And how could you not? I mean, the guy's a fucking anomaly. But I do not think this fight is very good for him. I think that Charlie Campbell is the deserved favorite. Probably even deserves to be a little bit bigger of a favorite. I would cap him closer to 70%, minus 235 here. And, I mean, he's the much cleaner boxer of the two. Much cleaner. And I think he's probably the better grappler as well. Now, Trevor Peak is incredibly durable. He has good cardio. He's a fucking wild man. But, you know, lacks a lot of refined skill. And I think if Charlie Campbell fights a measured fight where he's not just going apeshit trying to knock a guy out in round one, I think if he fights smart into the fullest of his abilities, he should outbox Peak rather easily here. I mean, I think he's going to be quicker, more direct, you know, more defensively sound. And he actually fought, you know, a fight like this in the on CFFC, Cedric Gunnison, who's a good fighter who's gone on to do good things since that fight. That's the type of fight you want to see from Charlie here, is a measured 15-minute decision, take the fight for what it gives you, and win that way. But what's scary is his past several wins in a row are all knockouts. They're early knockouts, too. And you saw in the Alex Reyes fight, I mean, he is just chucking. I mean, he's aggressive. He's throwing a high volume of punches, and he's just trying to get his opponents out of there. I think that actually opens up a really risky possibility for Peak, you know, countering him or hurting him in some form. I mean, I just think a wild brawl favors Trevor Peak a lot more than it does Charlie Campbell. Charlie Campbell could win in that wild brawl, but I think it's an unnecessary risk. So I think if he fights smart, if he fights measured and calculated and a little bit slow of a pace, he should outbox Peak pretty easily. But, you know, hopefully this is entertaining. Peak's last fight, not too entertaining. He kind of dialed it back a little bit. And I think Peak's best chance of winning the fight is going back to his old ways of trying to just club guys out in the first round. Because that more measured approach that we saw versus Muhammad Yaya, I don't think that's a good strategy for him to win the fight. Some people are taking Charlie Campbell's submission. That price has gone to absolute dog shit. I mean, it's plus 375 right now, which I think is actually horrible. I mean, the guy's never had a submission in his career, and you're getting, you know, 25%, no, 20% for, no, just stay away from that. I mean, it's likely not going to open up at any better prices. You know, there's some 6-1 out there on Unibet. Even that, I don't think is good enough, man. But I like Campbell moneyline here. Anything under 2-1 would be a bet for me. And we are moving on. Sorry to my boy Joey Coco, who will be upset to hear that I'm betting against Trevor Peak, but hashtag value is value, you know? So we're moving on to a heavyweight fight next. Lucas Brezky taking on Walter Walker. Walker making his UFC debut. Brezky looking for his first UFC win. He's 0-3 and so far. Odds for this one, Walker minus 259, Brezky plus 219. I cannot fucking wait for this fight, boys. I'm stoked about this one. I did a lot of tape on this one. And Walter Walker is the brother of Johnny Walker. However, he fights rather totally opposite of his brother, where he is mostly an offensive grappler. He's a fast starter. He's looking to take you down. And his takedowns in his top game is actually not that bad. You know, he has an idea how to keep opponents down, how to control the wrist, how to drag them back down over and over. But his cardio does look concerning. I've seen several of his fights where he is huffing and puffing pretty early into the fight. Especially, I mean, he's a high-intensity grappler at heavyweight. I mean, and he's not lean. He's not, like, Carl Williams, I don't know what he weighs. I would guess 240-something. You know, but he's rather lean, so he can keep up that wrestling pace without too much difficulty. But, this thick motherfucker, Walter Walker, is having trouble keeping up that pace. Williams weighs 246. You know, in the 240 range. So that's why he's able to keep that pace. Walker, I think, is cutting to 265. I mean, I saw him weigh 265 in one of his most recent fights, and I think he's cutting down to that. So it explains why he is, you know, huffing and puffing from that grappling. So I do think he has a good chance of taking Bresky down early on. I think he will do that. However, in the Carl Williams fight versus Bresky, he got up a lot of times in that fight. I mean, he made Carl work. He was, you know, doing a little bit dangerous stuff, you know, putting his hands both on the mat. He was kind of giving up his back. Carl Williams is not a back taker and doesn't really focus on jiu-jitsu positions like that. So it'll be a little bit more risky here versus Walker, because he could get put in a worse spot or get his back taken or something. But what I saw in that fight is he's not going to accept bottom early on. He's going to try to work up. He's going to get back to his feet. And if he can do that here versus Walter Walker, he's going to make Walter work, and that's going to slow Walker down. And I think that that means that Bresky's got a good chance the longer this fight goes. But it's a risky window here. He has a window because, again, in the Carl Williams fight, he worked up a lot in the first and second round. The third round, he was gassed. He was totally, you know, spent in that third round. So Lucas Bresky's window here is the second round. He needs to get taken down in the first round, work his way up, make Walter Walker expend energy, and round two is his fucking chance. He needs to let go, he needs to throw some punches, he needs to land some shit, and he needs to knock Walker out in the second round, because if it gets to the third round, I think he's probably going to be slowing down again. And I mean, if it gets to the third round, it likely means that Walker had a good amount of takedown success in the second round as well, which is obviously not good for Bresky's chances. So I think Bresky money line, at this point, I would maybe stay away. I have some 255 on Bresky money line, but I think he's going to lose early on, get taken down, then you can jump it on the live line. His live line is going to skyrocket to, you know, 4, 5, 6 to 1. But before the fight, you got to take Lucas Bresky KO round two. It's 16-1. I'm pretty certain this bet is winning. You know, the odds have it at 1 divided by 17, 5.8%. I think they're a little bit closer to like 90%, a little bit here. So I'm very, very confident that Bresky is winning via second round knockout here. I have the KO round 2, 16-1. I have a little bit on KO round 3 at 21-1. But as I mentioned, if it gets to the third round, I don't think that's too good for Bresky. So we know his window here, and I think Bresky's getting his first UFC win here. His back is against the wall, guys. This is his last fight on the contract. He's 0-3. This is do or die. Walter Walker, this is his first fight on the contract. You know, he's brothers with Johnny Walker, who's in good graces with the UFC. Walker's got a huge leash, and Bresky's leash is at its wit's end here. So electric fight there. Moving on to the lightweight division, Ignacio Bahamundes, Christos Yagos in this one. Bahamundes is the huge favorite, -3 something, 330. Yagos coming back, +270. And we all know how this one's going to go. If you know Christos Yagos' career, you know that he is one of the most infamous gassers we've seen in the UFC in the past several years. It's a little bit, you know, skewed by he does have 8 decision wins. He is 8-3 in decisions, which is miraculous. But I mean, I just think later in his career, I don't know if he's undisciplined or he's not doing his cardio, but he consistently slows down in these fights. And Bahamundes, I don't think is very good. I mean, I think that last fight against Klein, well, he looked terrible. I mean, that was his worst performance to date. But man, this guy's kind of an anomaly. The Trey Ogden win, on the other hand, is aging well. But Ogden barely even wrestled in that fight. He didn't give himself a chance. So, you know, I think Christos is pretty likely to win the first round here. You know, he's the better wrestler of the two by far. He's going to be likely looking to take the fight to the floor. And he should hit takedowns here because he's significantly better at wrestling, but you got to think that success will be temporary. You know, holding a big guy down like Bahamundes is going to be tough, and Ignacio is going to work his way back up. And in the second and third round, you got to think Bahamundes is going to take over with a cardio advantage. But before the fight, if you make a bet on Christos Yagos, I think you're going to be looking pretty good in the middle towards the end of the first round. And you can always exit on the live bet, or you can maybe just let it ride and say, hey, he won the first round, maybe he's capable of winning the second round as well. I mean, the pricing on this, they have Baja Mondes is a bigger favorite than Zellhuber was, right? And I think Zellhuber is actually is about the same price, maybe a little bit bigger of a dog, but around the same price. I think Zellhuber is much better than Baja Mondes is. We need to see that fight at some point because they're kind of a little bit of a mirror match there. But Baja Mondes sub in the second and third round, I think, is going to be worth a look. Let me see what that's at on FanDuel right now, because with Yagos slowing down, he's going to be looking for the takedowns. If he's slowing, if he's getting outstruck, he's going to try to go back to that wrestling of his, and he's likely going to leave himself open to be choked, just like he was in his last fight against Zellhuber. And Baja Mondes actually does have one submission win, but it was in the UFC. It was over Zhu Rong. It was a Bravo choke, a Darce choke. So I think he does have the ability to hit a front choke of some form, like a guillotine, an anaconda, or a Darce here. Let's see what the sub Baja Mondes is, 430 at any time, and sub 2-3 is 950. There we go. That's the bet. Sub 2-3 for Baja Mondes plus 950. Going to be entering in a wager on that right now as we speak. That should be another easy, huge plus money winner right after that Bresky KO2 in the last fight. So moving on. Best fight on the card, in my opinion, by a pretty good margin, honestly. I mean, this is a banger of a fight. I cannot wait for this one. And we have Morgan Charrier versus Chepe Mariscal in the featherweight division. Odds for this one have Charrier minus 115, Mariscal minus 105. The action has been coming in on Chepe this week, you know? I mean, Charrier was, I think, minus 170 at the start of the week. Yeah, I mean, right after last week's card ended, the day after, it was minus 175 all the way into minus 115 now. So a ton of steam on Chepe Mariscal. Not sure who's behind it. Not sure if there's tout action on it, as we say. I know one guy, a sharp bettor, who is on Chepe, but I don't think he's single-handedly responsible. No, the whale of the MMA betting industry, if you guys know, is not on this bet. So, it could be the second whale. All right, we're getting into some fucking niche inside jokes here. So, getting back to the matchup, I like Morgan Charrier here. It's a pick'em fight. It's a great fight to pick a side on. We had one of those last week in the Bazookia fight. I did nail that one, I feel. But I'm breaking out the catchphrase again for this one. Great fight to pick a side on. It's a near pick'em fight. And you have a tale of two fighters. You have an American Hispanic regional tier legend, and then you have a British regional tier legend in Charrier. Both these guys extremely experienced in the regional scenes, and they're both, you know, kind of breaking into the UFC. Second fight for Charrier, third for Mariscal here. And Mariscal's done well. I mean, you know, he beat Peak really, really easily on short notice, up a weight class in that first one. He was losing to Jack Jenkins, you know, getting kicked a lot in that fight, which I think is big here. Then, you know, he took down Jenkins and broke his arm. But he was working his way into that fight. The one thing I'm seeing when I'm watching Chepe Mariscal fights is this guy thrives in fights. I mean, he loves getting in fights. He doesn't care about getting hit. He actually starts, you know, revving up his intensity the more he gets hit. We see so many guys who react poorly to getting hit and quit, like Andre Petrosky, who hit his head on a hip and just pitched his tent right away. Not Jose Mariscal, man. I mean, he thrives in brawls, and that kind of concerns me, because if you look at Morgan Charrier's record, he's fought a lot of 5-round fights and he's been to a lot of decisions. He's 5-8 in decisions, losing record in decisions. His last fight that he won was against Bazant, split decision win. So Lewis Monarch, split decision win, a split draw back in 2018. So it seems like he has a clear pattern of when his fights go the distance. They're not clear. So that does concern me a little bit with backing the Charrier side here, but I just think that he is the much cleaner striker of the two. I think his kicks are going to be a big weapon here. We saw Jack Jenkins having a lot of success with the kicks. I think Charrier is an even better kicker. And I think that Chepe has potential to hit some takedowns here. We did We seen both of these guys be on top position, but I think Charrière is much worse on bottom. I think that if he's on bottom, he's much more likely to spend more time there than Mariscal is, who I think is the better scrambler of the two. And Charrière does like hitting his own takedowns from time to time, but I think that would be a mistake here because I think it'd be a matter of time before Mariscal stands up or reverses, and I just don't see Charrière getting a lot of good work done on top. And in that Bazant fight, the one I was just mentioning for Charrière, he hit takedowns and was on top for all three of those rounds. All three of the rounds he lost position in towards the end of the round as well. So that's not something you want to see. You know, we know how these judges score. They value recency bias. You don't want to win the first 3 or 4 minutes of a round and then end the last minute poorly. And I think that that is what might happen here if Charrière ends up on top. So hopefully Charrière keeps it on the feet, outstrikes Mariscal here with his kicks. But, you know, man, it has potential to be close. It has a lot of potential to be close. I don't think either guy is going to, you know, blow one out of the water here. So that's why it's a great fight to pick a side on. Do the tape. Look at, look through their records. Look through their career histories. Think about the fight and pick a side and bet that side. And my side in this one is Morgan Charrière at the near pick'em price of minus 115. So moving on to the co-main event here in the featherweight division as well. Alexander Hernandez taking on Damon Jackson. Odds to this one have Hernandez minus 190, Damon Jackson plus 165. So I'm doing a little bit of a pivot here. I am backing Alexander Hernandez in this fight, minus 180 price tag. And career-wise, I have not been a fan of Hernandez. I don't think I might have never bet on his money line before. Damon Jackson, I have been a fan of career-wise. But I saw some things in Damon Jackson's last fight that really concerned me. There was the Quarantillo fight. And in that fight, he came out hot like he does in a lot of his fights, and he won the first round, and he slowed down significantly in the second and third round. He just didn't have that same dog in him, didn't have that same fight that he had in some of his other fights when he fought Mirsad Bektik on 5 days notice and was just hustling, came back and choked him out in the third round there. I mean, that's the Damon Jackson that we came to know for a few years. Now he is 35 years old now. He did get knocked out horribly by Dan Ige, and he did, take a beating in that Quarantillo fight, and I'm starting to think that, the wheels might be falling off a little bit. He also does train at Fortis MMA, who I think has just been looking absolutely fucking atrocious lately. I mean, I don't know what their record is, but Jeff Neal just lost. Kennedy and Zetchiku just lost as a 7-1 favorite. What's that other... Ryan Spann has always fucking sucked. Is coming off a loss as well. I mean, they're just not doing well down there at Fortis MMA. Oh, you can't forget homeboy Fernie Garcia going 0-4 in the UFC. It's just, I mean, their camp is in trouble lately, And I mean, I think Hernandez, what does he train? He doesn't train. Oh yeah, Factory X. That they're not exactly a great camp either. I don't love those type of fighters, but they're doing a lot better lately than Fortis's. I mean, homeboy Youssef Zalal came off the couch 1 week notice and beat Billy Q last week. So that's something that neither of these guys have been able to do. Both these guys lost to Billy Q, but I think that the way Damon lost was much more concerning. At least Hernandez, actually, they lost in pretty similar fashion. Hernandez got finished. Damon didn't get finished, but I just didn't like what I saw from Damon in his last fight. And Hernandez also fought really poorly last fight against Aljo, just got outstruck bell to bell there, never kicked it into second gear, never really had any success in that fight. But I think he will here. I think that he's the much better boxer than Damon Jackson. I think that he will be landing early and often on Jackson. And I think Hernandez's takedown defense and defensive grappling is pretty good. I mean, he had a really good display in the OAM fight back in the day. Hasn't really displayed it too much lately. He's usually the one taking his opponents down. He hasn't fought many opponents that are looking to take him down. Moicano did and had a lot of success with it. I don't think Moises did as well, but I think that Hernandez will do well here. He will stuff the takedowns, outbox Damon Jackson, and get back on track with a win here. But if I'm overreacting to Damon Jackson's past two fights, I could be off here. But we just saw Billy Q look like an absolute fucking shot fighter. versus Yusef Salal. And that guy just, you know, comprehensively beat Damon Jackson in the second and third round just, you know, 6-7 months ago. So that doesn't have me looking too concerned. You might be thinking right now, hey, Billy Q beat Alexander Hernandez too just a while ago. I really think the difference between Billy Q just 2 years ago to now is significant. I mean, his style, he just always gotten wars. He had that nasty knockout with Barbosa, and, you know, I just think the guy has gotten significantly worse over the past few years. So I like Hernandez here, and I think Hernandez round three or by decision, that line is out at plus 230, I think could be an interesting one here, because I think Damon will compete early on. I think he'll definitely have his moments in round one, might even win the first round. But I think the second and third, Hernandez will start to take over. And the reason why I like the three decision is because I think that Hernandez might even be able to get Damon out of there the later this fight goes. So that's going to bring us to the main event in the Premier Division, the middleweight division, a rematch taking place between Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis here. The odds for this one have Brendan Allen minus 210, Chris Curtis plus 180. And this first fight took place, let's see, December 4th, 2021. So we are about 2 years, 5 months removed from that. It was actually the last time that Brendan Allen lost. Since then, he's picked up 6 wins. Five of them being finishes, five of them being rear naked chokes, the one decision win over Malkoon, very questionable decision there. But I do think that Brendan Allen has gotten better since that first fight. I think he's continued to grow and improve. He's training at different places, you know, bouncing around to different camps now, spending some time in Philadelphia. Not with those guys, they're not looking too great lately, but he's probably, you know, just beating the shit out of all of them. But I do think Brendan Allen has improved more as a fighter since that first fight than Chris Curtis. Chris Curtis, you know, he's kind of been the same fighter for the past, you know, decade. He's just a southpaw boxer. That's all he is. He throws an occasional kick. He never grapples. He has solid takedown defense, but he's looking to rip you to the body, rip you to the head, outbox you, and possibly score a knockout. The guy has heavy hands, as we saw in the first fight. You know, the body work was landing well for Chris Curtis, and then he ripped to the body, went up to the head, rocked Allen, and chased the finish with the furious strikes and got him out of there. But I think that first fight, Brendan Allen was just extremely overconfident. He thought that he could box with Curtis. He thought he could strike with him. He was coming off of a win over Puna Soriano, who was thought to be as this nasty southpaw boxer. And he thought, I just outstruck Puna Soriano. You know, what's Chris Curtis going to be? He's not going to be much of a trouble. And I think that was a really short notice fight for Chris Curtis as well. It was. I think he just took that fight very unserious. I don't think he had a good game plan. He paid the ultimate price, got knocked out there, and I think that we're going to see, you know, a tactical adjustment from him here. He's not going to be looking to spend as much time on the feet. He's going to pursue his offensive grappling a lot more urgently, and I think that that will win him the fight. I'm not sure how it's going to get done. You got to think it'll probably be a rear naked choke. The guy already has 6 rear naked chokes in the UFC in less than 5 years. And you go back to the Aaron Jeffrey fight, another fighter who's a good fighter, rear naked choked him. So he has 7 rear naked chokes in the past 5 years. So that is definitely a leading way he's going to win the fight. But I think this one is going to finish, man. I think it's either going to be Brendan dragging him to the mat and finding his way to a back take and choking him out, or it's going to be Chris stuffing takedowns, keeping the fight standing, banging Brendan to the body, and then possibly knocking him out again. So I think either guy having success here is pretty correlated to a finish. So I've got a bet on this one for the fight not to start the fifth round. Minus 150 on DraftKings. And I just think, like I was just saying, I just think that no matter where the fight is, I think there's going to be risk for a finish on either side, right? I mean, you know, I'm not talking that Chris is going to finish him on the ground. I'm just saying if Brendan is having grappling success, I think he's going to be liable for a finish. And I think if Chris is stuffing takedowns and having striking success, he's going to be very live for a finish as well. So I think this one's going to finish probably the second or third round for one of these guys. Not really sure who. I lean Brendan Allen, but at the money line price, no interest in Brendan Allen. Fuck that. I don't think his wrestling is good enough. I don't think that the first fight he pursued it nearly enough. And Allen has a little bit of a questionable IQ at times, so it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't take that, path of least resistance and pursue those takedowns super heavily here. So, official pick, I'll go Brendan Allen, rear naked choke in the second round. But this fight could go either way. I think money line wise, it is Curtis or pass, and interesting rematch on short notice here. And that is going to do it for me. Got a decent amount of bets, not quite as many as last week, but I like Cesar Almeida money line. Possibly going to bet Matsumoto round two, round three. The line's not out yet, but I'm definitely looking to bet Pedro Falcao. I will be betting, I already bet Chuck Campbell moneyline, Charlie Campbell moneyline, minus 180. Lucas Bresky moneyline, plus 255, and the KO round two, round three. We'll be betting Yagos moneyline, already bet Charriere moneyline. I am in on Hernandez moneyline in the co-main event, and I like that fight does not start round five in the main event. Also, one more, Hernandez round three or decision at plus 230. So, good amount of money lines this week. A few prop sprinkles as well. Of course, the best bet on the card, Lucas Bresky, round two KO, 16-1. Confirmed winner in that one. I can't wait for that one to come home. And that's going to do it. So, hope you all enjoyed the podcast. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Win some bets, and we'll see you all before the big UFC 300 card next week. Peace out, everyone. We'll